What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Ow! Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Oof. Ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy Wince-Free Whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for 2 shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White, a whiter smile without the wince.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 100 years ago, stout, red-blooded Americans worried that American boys were losing their natural path to manhood, that too much time around books and skirts was ruining American boys. Substitute video games and couch time, and the fear is back today. Too much Xbox, not enough bugs and mud. Now, just in time for summer rambles, comes The Dangerous Book for Boys, rocketing up the bestseller charts, and it's all about bugs and mud and guns and battle. Boy stuff, say the authors. Up next on Point, The Dangerous Book for Boys and American Kids at Play. Joining me first today from Hertfordshire, England, is Con Eagledon, co-author with his brother Hal of The Dangerous Book for Boys. It's been a runaway bestseller in Britain and just hit the bookstores in the U.S. It's a kind of old-fashioned how-to manual for boyhood, exploration and play, with entries on everything from fishing and fossils to water bombs and essential Shakespeare. Con Eagledon, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
So what did you set out to do here?
The original idea was to, recapture all of the things that we used to do when we were kids. I think partly because I had a son of my own. I just got in the shed with my brother for 6 months and, you know, put a list together of the treehouse we made and the bow and arrow and the catapult and all the rest of them. We also started to add in things as adults that we cared about, partly because I think we felt they weren't being taught anymore, like stories of courage, for example. I mean, boys love stories of courage. It's an absolute fact. So we put in things like Douglas Bader and Scott of the Antarctic and the Wright brothers and Nelson, depending on which edition you've got, if it's the UK or the American one. It's, something that we all know boys love, that sort of thing. But for some reason, it wasn't being done, so we felt this was an opportunity to put it back in.
So here we've got 200 or 300 pages of paper airplanes and seven wonders of the ancient world, building a treehouse, making a bow and arrow, running out of codes and ciphers and naval flag codes and insects and spiders and juggling. And it just took off like crazy, even though, I mean, this stuff isn't magic, but it was a giant bestseller. What do you make of the appetite for this kind of old-fashioned boys' childhood formula?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, people do say it's old-fashioned, but it's old-fashioned because it's optimistic. I didn't want to write a sort of cynical modern book because, you know, I've noticed a lot of people as they get older, including my own generation, you know, we start to look at the world with slightly more cynical eyes, but of course that doesn't happen for a 10-year-old because every new generation of 10-year-olds is a blank slate. And, we didn't want to sort of write any book like that. We wanted to write something that looks forward to the future, that's optimistic and reflects all of the wide-ranging interests of a 10-year-old. I mean, why not? You know, a 10-year-old is interested in everything. There are no doors shut in his face yet, or a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old.
Hey, I'm all for optimism, but I do have to insist it's old-fashioned just in its feel. I mean, the packaging, maybe it's different in the U.K. I've got the U.S. edition. It's a retro style from the cover right on in. And the kind of entries here, not that the boys won't gobble it up, but, you know, it feels like something out of, the 1930s or the 19-teens in the United States. The golden age of piracy, a simple electromagnet, secret inks, the moon,
that's
skipping
the thing.
Stones.
I'm not objecting to the word old-fashioned. It's just that, of course, if you are a young kid, some things have to be low-tech, and we could do a simple electrical circuit for a tripwire or a pressure plate outside your bedroom so that you can know when your mother's coming up, something like that. And that's simple, but we didn't want to go into sort of serious electronics, partly because I'm still hopeless at it, but also because it had to be low-tech, because that's the kind of thing we did when we were kids.
Okay, take us into some of these. I mean, rabbits. Rabbits don't fare well when you stick your boys on them. How to hunt and cook a rabbit. Give us some advice here. How's that work? Just give us an example.
Well, I mean, the main thing about the book is that we had to do everything. We've read other books where the author obviously hadn't built the raft or whatever it was he was trying to tell you to. So the rule number one was we had to do everything, and that meant going out and shoot the rabbit. We had to go, we got a decent air rifle, because of course in England you can't get a decent rifle quite so easily. Mm. And then we went around and searched.
Not as big a problem here, as you know, my friend.
Pardon?
Not as big a problem in the USA, that
no,
rifle
exactly.
acquisition
in
part.
In England, you don't get guns so easily. You have to make sarcastic remarks at each other. It doesn't work quite as well.
Uh-uh.
Air rifles, though, we got a decent one. Obviously remembered places we'd seen rabbits. I mean, that's the first rule. If you know, you remember where you see rabbits because they almost never go very far from their run.
Skipping stones. Do boys need advice these days on how to skip a stone across the surface of a pond?
That was only 3/4 of a page. I mean, we put it in. It's not that we were trying to, really, at the beginning, to write sort of something for boys. In a way, first of all, we were recapturing things we did. So we used to try skimming stones. Partly, it was just to put in that the world record is 38 different skips. And I thought that was impressive enough just to work it in somewhere. I mean, an awful lot of these chapters, you know, contain facts that sort of fascinate me. And again, this was a very personal kind of book. I mean, we didn't write it to try and, you know, sell a lot of books. We wrote it because it was the sort of thing we wanted when we were kids. The really nice thing has been finding out that loads of other people care about exactly the same stuff.
Mm. At the very beginning, you write, in this age of video games and cell phones, there must still be a place for knots, tree houses, and stories of incredible courage. The one thing we always say about childhood is that we seem to have more time back then.
Yeah.
This book will help you recapture those Sunday afternoons and long summers. And you've got it all about the boys. There's a front piece here. Do you have a copy of the book? Could you read the little bit from Sir Frederick? Was it Treves?
Well, I found it. I mean, it was in a copy of a bound Boy's Own annual from about 1912, I think, and I found it was just on the letters page. It
written to a prince, the Prince of Wales at that time.
Yeah, Could you read it
for us?
Oh crikey! Hang on, give me a second.
If you've got it in front of you, it kind of gives a sense of the theme, the aura of your book here, the gist of it, and the very sort of pip British angle on it too. But let's hear it if you've got it.
Don't worry about genius, and don't worry about not being clever. Trust rather to hard work, perseverance, and determination. The best motto for a long march is don't grumble, plug on. You hold your future in your own hands. Never waver in this belief. Don't swagger. The boy who swaggers, like the man who swaggers, has little else that he can do. He is a cheapjack crying his own paltry wares. It is the empty tin that rattles most. Be honest, be loyal, be kind. Remember that the hardest thing to acquire is the faculty of being unselfish. As a quality, it is one of the finest attributes of manliness. Love the sea, the ringing beach, and the open downs. Keep clean, body and mind.
And there's the exhortation right at the beginning, and then the dangerous book for boys will plunge its readers into playing marbles and facts about the moon, the Ten Commandments, a brief history of artillery. You've got a son, but you've also got a daughter. Are you writing a comparable book for her? Would the same one work? Could you scratch out boys and put in girls?
I've been asked about this. Obviously, could I write one for girls? I mean, this is the next great adventure for me, I suppose, because I have a 4-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old daughter, as well as an older boy. To some extent, I think probably not. I think this is something that other people will do. I know of a couple of different versions being written for girls by women. And to be honest, that's partly because they know better than I do what would go in that book. I mean, the first thing we did was sit down with the list and just say, right, do you remember when we made the treehouse? And, you know, that was an easy thing. You know, we weren't trying to capture boys. We were just sort of reflecting our own interests.
But I don't know if it's the same debate in the UK, but in the United States, a lot of people will say right away, well, wait a minute, why do you need different books? I mean, my daughter picked this up, and her first words were, this is such a stereotype. She's got the American. My son picked it up and says, I want this.
Of course, you get the same debate. I mean, these are sister cultures, and of course, people have occasionally said, you know, why are you trying to exclude girls? And I'm not trying to exclude girls. We didn't come at it from that sort of end. We came at it from the end of knowing what boys like and then putting a book full of them because we were boys. I mean, that's the only reason. If you like, we're celebrating boys. And as a father of a son, and having spoken to a lot of fathers since this was published, I know that that's a reasonable thing to do. Thankfully, we've come out of the sort of decades where people try to pretend that, you know, boys are exactly like girls except with occasional aggression problems. I mean, it's It's tough. They think differently. They learn differently. They're interested in different things. And there's nothing wrong with admitting that. There never was.
It's got a funny combination of, you know, down and dirty, skin the rabbit, and then highbrow. You've got essential Shakespeare in here. Every boy must know, you cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war from Julius Caesar, or once more into the breach, dear friends, or, you know, something is rotten in the state of Denmark, or we few, we happy few, we band of brothers. What's the? Are you trying to give the whole child here? Is that the idea? Go out and play in the mud and quote Shakespeare while you do it?
You know, I had a dad who flew in the RAF in Bomber Command, who was a maths and physics teacher, sort of very competent with carpentry, that sort of thing. But at the same time, he quoted poems. And it's always struck me that, you know, the great, if you like, breadth of manhood is that you can do all of these things. You don't have to be totally practical. You can also love song and poems and literature and you name it. I mean, a lot of the great writers are men. At the end of the day, there is a certain confidence that generations like my father's generation and grandfather's have in certain areas, like grammar, like their education. And I found that a lot of people sort of aged 50 and below don't have that confidence. And that's a daft thing. I mean, there was a period in the 60s and 70s where grammar became very unpopular, for example. They took the nuts and bolts of language out of schools. And then they wonder why boys don't do as well when boys need structure. You need a little bit of structure. Yes, you can sit down and write about the old lady and how she feels about losing her kids, but you also need a bit of structure. You need those nuts and bolts to make the whole thing work.
Neil's calling from Ogdensburg, New York. Neil, you're on the air. What do you think?
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I grew up on a farm myself. I think the kids today just don't get enough of, you know, activities. They spend too much time doing structured things and in front of the television playing video games, and I just think that they should get out and do more.
And what's the price of that? If they don't get enough, what's the consequence?
Well, physically and also mentally, you know, they don't have enough time today. You don't see kids out just playing and imagining things and just being kids. They spend too much time with structured activities and sitting in front of that television playing video games.
So would you give the book, I mean, why, just boys? Are boys the only one with that problem? What do you think about doing it just for boys here, Neil?
Oh, well, I think, you know, he made an important point that, you know, he's writing to what he knows and that, you know, boys are different than girls, but I think it's kids in general. It's kids in general today. You don't see kids outside. I drive around a lot with my job, and you don't see kids outside playing and just doing things that, you know, kids do.
Yeah, set them free, and here's a handbook to get started. Hunting and Cooking a Rabbit, page 238. Neil, thanks for your call. Let's get another from Janine in Norton, Massachusetts. Janine, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me fine?
Loud and clear, Janine.
I'm just calling to actually relay a story about my son and a comment about why we might see what we see in society. The comment is about Calvin and Hobbes. I don't know if you remember that comic strip from Bill Watterson.
Sure.
And my son, we were so happy when he started liking it because as young people, my husband and I, we liked reading it. And when he read it, he actually took one of the events from out of the comic strip and did it at home. He got in the tub and started making the water splash back and forth so that when we came into the bathroom, there was just this puddle of water all over the floor. And imagine, we live in an apartment on the second floor.
So did you say, oh, no, I've failed as a parent, or I've succeeded? He's had the freedom to make a flood.
Actually, my husband and I, we were very dismayed when we saw it, just because we live in an apartment. And after we made him clean it up, you know, soak it up with towels, and we taught him, you know, you shouldn't do everything that you see in books. When we got back to our bedrooms, we laughed so loud because it was something that he did, you know, seeing what, you know, what was going on in the story, how it was such a typically boy thing to do. My daughter had read the same book and never had any inclination to do that same thing.
But he was ready to let the flood go right there. Janine, we love the story, and thanks very much for calling in with it. Con, yes, I hear you there.
A comment on that.
Yes. Please.
I mean, first of all, when I was a kid, I tried to make candles, and I melted them all into a big tin. And the trouble was I did that in the living room carpet, so that when we finally lifted the tin, it came away with a circle of carpet underneath. So, you know, boys do occasionally get involved in this sort of thing. But just to go back to the man who was talking about you know, the worst thing you can do is to leave them with a PlayStation. We all know this. I mean, deep down, we all know it. I loved computer games when I was a teenager, but you know, if I go to my son's, he's only six, if I go to his local primary school, the headmistress will tell me with great pride about their enormous suite of computers, that, you know, brand new and everything else, a whole room dedicated to it. Honestly, I could care less if a five-year-old gets on a computer. I mean, I make my living with computers. It's important for me. Mm. You know, I used to love computer games, but there's such a thing as, you know, neglecting the basic skills, reading, writing, and arithmetic, learning about the world and everything else, and just wasting hour after hour on a game where all you get out of it is a sore thumb.
Not to mention dog tricks and marbles and everything else you've got here. We got another call, Bob, from North Hero, Vermont. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I had a profound experience the other day. I'm a musician, so I'm a stay-at-home dad.
Okay.
My wife has a day job.
Yeah.
I've got two sons, 7 and 2.5. North Hero is an island in Lake Champlain,
mm-hmm.
the lake between Vermont and New York. And I was down at the lake with my 7-year-old 2 days ago, and hadn't put the dock in yet. And out from under the dock came a snake, and he caught that snake. And
your 7-year-old or your 2.5-year-old, Bob?
My 7-year-old.
Okay.
And you know, we've got the modern stay-at-home dad lifestyle and everything.
Yeah.
But that moment that Tony picked up that snake by the tail, it was his first snake that I've seen him pick up, my heart just soared. I just felt like, this is perfect. I said, you've got to run in and tell Mommy that you caught a snake.
And what did Mommy say, Bob?
She was disgusted. She was like,
can I just point out that he was, that father, I didn't catch your name at the beginning, I'm sorry. You were at a lake with your sons, and there's nothing more valuable a father can do than just simply spending time with his sons.
Okay, here we go. Bob sees his 7-year-old son catch a snake. His heart soars. Mom's grossed out. You say you spend time at the lake with your sons.
Yeah.
As the father of sons and daughter, I hear something missing. I want to bring one more voice into this conversation, if I may, Con. With me in the studio here in Boston is Dan Kindlin, a nationally recognized child psychologist, co-authored the New York Times bestseller Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Boys. He's now at work. His latest book is Alpha Girls, Understand the New American Girl and How She is Changing the World. Dan Kindlin, what do you think of the whole craze for the dangerous book for boys?
You know, I'm really conflicted about this book because there's some of it that is so wrong, I think, that one of the last things that that many boys need is more danger. But then on the other hand, I look at it and there's so many cool things in the book that it's hard to get mad at it. And it, you know, your childhood was very similar to mine. You know, I learned to skip stones. I hunted. I played, you know, baseball for hours and hours every day, and it was the best time of my life in many ways. And I agree with you that boys do need this, but I think that I had a very similar experience to the caller with the snake in the lake with my own daughter not too long ago when I was watching her catch in a softball game, and a player came in and barreled her over behind the plate, and she had to get herself up and, you know, patch up her blood but stay in the game because they didn't have any other players. And to me, I thought this was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. She had learned this great life lesson that I had learned as a boy playing sports that way, and it was it was an important lesson for her as well. And that's one of the reasons I think that girls are doing so much better in school, is that they've learned the things that boys knew growing up, but that boys haven't expanded their repertoire as much, that they're very good at these kinds of dangerous games, but they haven't looked at the emotional side as
well.
Much.
Well, are they, though, Con? I mean, part of the premise that I hear from you is boys are kind of losing their touch with the back roads of nature.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm glad you give me the chance to come back in on that one.
Yeah.
You know, boys in schools, there are a lot of reasons why they're not doing so well at the moment. I mean, I suppose as a generation, you know, they could be getting more stupid, but that is very unlikely. So the odds are the system has changed rather than the boys. And if you look at education, if you look at an oral component to English, if you look at coursework, the inclusion of group work in a lot of activities, non-competitive activities, you get a system that doesn't really promote boys. And also, you take any danger out of it. You look at playgrounds, and there's no chance to take a small risk. You can't hang upside down on monkey bars anymore. And the irony of this is not that boys become soft, but actually they go out and take risks on their own. You don't want boys on train tracks or playing chicken on a freeway. So you have to allow them to take a few risks under reasonably supervised circumstances. That's what we've sort of stopped doing. We've allowed boys to be so completely wrapped in cotton wool, mollycoddled, that when they become 15, 16, and they get in the car for the first time, something bad happens.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was maybe a year ago now, there was a whole craze in the U.S. about boys in trouble, and there was a lot said about that, a lot of pushback on that as well, that if you look, yeah. It depends, you know, what boys, what girls in particular are you talking about? I'm not sure if it's so clear, but yet let me ask Dan here, do you see, here's a very successful book. This thing's going like crazy.
Congratulations on that con, by the way.
Is it just good marketing to wrap it around boys? Or is there a real hunger or need for boys to have a different guidebook to life?
Well, I don't know if they really need a different guidebook. There certainly, as Khan says, there are many people now who are emphasizing the differences between boys and girls, and we're all fascinated with biology and the Human Genome Project. But what a lot of the research shows really is that, especially as boys move into the teenage years, boys and girls, that there are many more similarities. That the similarities are more apparent than the differences. But that said,
of course, we're all human.
Right, we are.
Boys do get a big boost of testosterone when they're put in a thrilling and dangerous situation. You only to put a baby boy on a swing and push him, and you'll see his face light up.
Well, as a father of two daughters, you'll see with your own daughters as they get older that you'll see a lot of similarities. That if you do, play rugby with them and take them fishing the way I did with my daughters, you'll find that they enjoy a lot of those activities as well.
Let us hear from a couple of callers who have opinions here. Jack in Brockton, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Khan, I want to congratulate you on a terrific book. I hadn't heard about it on the radio or in the papers, but the first time I saw it, I picked it up for the young daughter of some friends of mine, and I wanted to say, first of all, the reason that I thought it would be great for her is not only the points that everybody else has made about girls ought to know this stuff, but everybody loves a polymath, and just as young ladies are impressed by a guy who can cook a tasty meal or sew a seam, I think guys will be impressed by a young lady who can catch a fish or build a campfire.
And you've got instructions right across that whole waterfront here. Latin phrases every boy should know, how to play poker, a brief history of artillery, the solar... I mean, everybody can learn. It's not just bugs in the woods, but you got it for a girl, Jack.
Right. My other point is, and I guess it's in the same vein, having paged through the copy I bought, I'm going to go out and get another one for my bookshelf, because even though I'm in my 40s now, I hope I'm not past the point where I might possibly need plans to build a treehouse or something like that.
It's kind of irresistible, isn't it?
It really is irresistible, and I don't think that, although it is a great book for boys, and I'm just as glad to see that that we're getting to the distaff side of it, too, because I'm very glad that I taught my young nephews how to bake and cook and sew, and I'm looking forward to teaching this young lady who my friends are bringing up how to catch a fish. And I think it's a terrific book, and wanted to thank you and congratulate you, Khan.
Both genders. Jack, that's great. Khan, Dan Kindlin, I want to bring another voice in here, if I may. Joining us from New York, Katha Pollitt is here, columnist at The Nation magazine, a leading American feminist voice, author of Virginity or Death, Subject to Debate, and Reasonable Creatures. She has a 19-year-old daughter who likes contact sports. Katha, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Dangerous book for boys. Does it make your skin crawl, or let them have it? Why not?
Well, you know, I just got my copy about 15 minutes ago, and I've been reading it with great fascination. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me, of course, as other people have said, I don't see these things as particularly, for boys.
Really? Truly?
I did a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of these things. I did The Invisible Ink. I loved grammar.
There's even an entry on grammar. That one took me by surprise.
Yeah,
okay.
I had memorized. I knew all the poems that he mentions, except for the extremely imperialistic Vitae Lampada. I don't know what that's doing in there, but I knew my parents told me the story of Robert the Bruce and the spider. I made candles.
I never killed
a rabbit, and I hope never to have to kill one. I guess it's sort of useful to have this book if I'm lost in the woods somewhere.
Can I say?
Khan, what do you say to Kathy in New York?
Well, there'll always be, to be honest, there'll always be individuals who are interested, women who are interested and girls who are interested in this. But it's worth saying that the vast majority of boys are more likely to. I mean, just look at a science fiction convention, for goodness sake, you know. Is it, anyone, ask the question, is it more likely to be filled with men than women? I mean, it's going to be men. Men and women do have different interests, but the strange thing is that if men go to a science fiction convention, we'll say we'll make jokes about geeks, and we won't realize that actually that suggests that boys are interested in stories. Just, you know, just to pick one example.
Well, I mean, Kathy, you're our feminist on the line here. What do you say to that?
I could just leap in here.
Yeah.
I would say that, you know, there are enormous social pressures shaping boys and girls' interests. For example, you know, take the whole Barbie thing. I mean, there is so much in our culture that tells girls to stay home, to be passive, to care about their hair and all that stuff. And then they grow up and that has an effect, and they feel excluded and in fact are excluded from some typically masculine pursuits and vice versa. And I think one of the nice things about living now is that there's a little less of that than there was when I was coming up. And so that my daughter, who is small and slender, she plays rugby. She loves it. And she's like the person who spoke before. She gets injured all the time.
But let me ask you, are you willing today, you're a feminist in 2007,
yes,
boys and girls, are they different? Should they be raised differently? Or is that in itself a throwback retro idea to you?
It that way. What I would say is there are a million, you know, millions of children,
yeah,
and there are lots and lots of different ways. You could point to ways that black and white children are different, but you would never say that it was biological. But the point is, whatever biological, you know, tendencies there exist, most people fall within the range, right? I mean, there may be extremes on either end or whatever. I don't know, and I don't think we can know, given how much sex typing there is right now. But the point is, I just sort of think, like, why label invisible ink as a boy thing?
Because it sells, Kathy. I guess for one.
We're just trying to increase his market share by letting him have books that are sold to boys as well as girls. Con, we're really on your side.
Con, why not just for kids, the dangerous book for kids, Con?
If I could just say one other thing.
Oh, okay. You, please.
I'm sorry. We'll be gracious. Just to broaden it out from the boy-girl thing. It's one thing that does strike me, and the first thing that strikes me about this book, which is, you know, very cleverly marketed, and very charming, and I at first thought, well, this is going to the used bookstore right away, and I said, no, I got to keep this, you know.
right, I know.
I may want to make a battery someday, something my daughter did when she was a kid, but anyway, it was a potato.
Yeah, we're talking this hour about The Dangerous Book for Boys and how our kids play today, boys, girls, both. Maybe Con Eagledon is with us. He and his brother Hal wrote The Dangerous Book for Boys. It shot up the bestseller list in the UK and is now doing the same in these United States. Katha Pollitt's here, columnist at The Nation magazine. Her book last year, collection of essays, Virginity or Death. And Dan Kindlin joins us. He is author of Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Boys, and also Alpha Girls, Understanding the New American Girl and How She's Changing the World. Sherry's calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Sherry, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to call and say I'm 60 years old, but when I was young, I grew up in Montana,
yeah,
more of a rural area, and I played, I learned how to skip stones. I played with the boys all the time. In other words, I wanted to be outside. But I think the sad thing is that, we're just too urban, and there's no chance for boys or girls to go out and catch frogs or find snakes or skip stones even.
Yep.
And so it's kind of, you know, a book for maybe farm boys or people that grow up in small communities, and I don't know how kids in the city would do any of it.
I mean, how would they even follow the instructions? Con, what do you say?
Well, I'm glad you gave me a chance to respond. I also wanted to respond to the last point. There's an awful lot in there that's practical and things you can do on your own, even if it's making a paper aeroplane or a water bomb. You don't need to be in the field. I mean, the funny thing is I grew up in a suburb just outside London, and most of this was done in a garden about 30 feet square. So it was, it's not a question of sort of running wild all the time. It's just skills, mostly. That's all we really wanted. If I could just respond to that last comment about it being a sort of weird look back at the future, at the past. I put things like famous battles in because famous battles are cool, and they were really interesting, and I wanted to know about Thermopylae and all the fantastic stories of the past, partly because they involve courage. and sort of duty and self-discipline and moments of great tragedy and moments of great heroism.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I put it in, because boys like that kind of thing, and so do men. It wasn't trying to create anything. I mean, I suppose to some extent I was responding to what boys want because I was a boy and I knew what I wanted. But that's about it. Any sort of claim that it was looking back at a weird, whiter, more conservative world is completely off the mark.
Yeah, how about it, Katha? Boys like battles and war and guides to artillery. What's up?
Okay, maybe they do, but it's interesting that these battles end more than 100 years ago.
You mean no Vietnam War in there?
Well, or let's take the Alamo, for example, I mean, which is told as, you know, the noble story of Davy Crockett and the others. But, you know, what if you're Mexican? I mean, in America, do we really want to sort of continue to promote this idea that, you know, the Mexicans were the bad guys?
But,
and if I could just say one more thing, you know, this is a very British book, and it has certain very British ideas, and one of them is sort of the romance of failure. For example, Scott. So, you know, I mean, I was obsessed with Captain Scott and his attempt to, you know, his Antarctic, you know, his quest to get to the South Pole first and all like that. And I read every book that was ever written about him at the time. But the truth is, the real great guy there was Amundsen, who actually did it and saved everybody. Nobody died.
Okay, I don't want to argue the South Pole. I mean, it is a British book, but it translates very well, I have to say, in spite of that. But Kath, I want to ask you about this point on courage. Khan says, let's tell boys stories of courage that they can thrill to and respond to.
And what about courage in the form of a woman? I mean, I don't like the idea that sort of identifying courage with men, and then girls are these people that, as you say, you respect.
But if the boy's going to dive into a book that says book for boys on the cover, is it okay in 2007 to give them that as a path to reading about courage, or do we have to balance everything 50-50 gender?
I'm not even saying that. I'm saying, what about Rosa Parks? Yep. Rosa Parks was as brave as anybody in this book.
But do boys just prefer to read stories about men than women?
She risked herself, and she achieved a great deal that was good.
No, absolutely, and there are some wonderful female heroes. I mean, Florence Nightingale, you can name a bunch of them, Gertrude Bell, but the point is, God, the boys do prefer to read more about men in stories
of
courage.
Maybe that's a problem, and I don't know that I'd say Gertrude Bell was so great.
But
isn't she the reason where, you know, Iraq is where it is?
Well, you have to say she had courage.
I want to get on your side here a little bit.
Dan Kinlan, referee for us a little bit here.
Well, I'm going to side with Khan on this one because, I mean, I read those books today about Gettysburg and the Battle of the Bulge. And
should boys not know about Rosa Parks? And
it's not that they shouldn't know about Rosa Parks. He's right. You know, we want boys to read more. That is one of the reasons that they don't do as well in school. And if they can be drawn to this, great. And part of what the psychology that Khan's getting at here is that everybody, but maybe boys in particular, want to test themselves. They want to know, would I be up to this? Would I be able to, do the same thing that Scott did? Or
girls
do the same
don't. You're
thing.
Writing alpha girls. They
well,
don't?
Well, some of them do, but it's that historically, the way that men have been tested has been in battle. And even though I would never want a child of mine or myself to be in a battle, you're fascinated with the idea of, would I have been as brave as that person? Would I have been able to walk across from McPherson's woods to the copse of trees at Gettysburg and face the cannon? And I think that is something that historically that men have had to face, and that boys ask themselves, would I have been able to do the same thing?
Let me get another woman in this conversation, if I may, just to balance the slate a little. Joan is calling from Granby, Connecticut. Joan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have two boys, and we both, my husband and I, take them out all the time. We skip stones, we canoe, we build tree forts.
Great.
We are out there all the time, and I think a lot of that is really more connecting with the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I had a daughter, I think she would be right there with us. But we also, you know, now that the subject has changed to that whole thing with courage, and my boys have a fascination with fighting and battles, but we've also taken them to show them the strength it takes to be at a peace rally and stand there while people are yelling at you and telling you you're wrong. And So we do try to show them courage in a lot of different ways.
Are you offended that in a book like this there's not an entry on, let's say, Rosa Parks? Does that bother you?
No, because, I think what I would take from the book, I have not read it, but what I would take from it is that great outdoor adventure. You know,
yes.
We sat on the banks with Mark Twain's books and read while fishing, and just... That's just another side of life. That's
what
just
could
a
be
delightful
better?
Side.
Can I?
Yeah, Colin,
can
please.
I also point out,
Joan,
the Antarctic didn't fight anyone. The only reason he was included in there is because of the incredibly poignant letters he wrote to his wife about how he hoped she would bring up their son now that he knew he was dying and couldn't make it back. And that's courage and sort of grace under enormous pressure that impressed me.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Alex. You're on the air, Alex.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
This is such a challenging thing for me. I'm a parent of two kids, and when they were first born, I thought I would give them everything I could give them in my hand. But I found out parenting is not a difficult thing. It's more a challenging thing. There are two set of rules, or if you would, two set of living standards. One is what you expect to have for your kids, or what the others expect of you to have for your kids, what have you, and then what reality is. And how I'm raising is like I'm challenged against the TV, I'm challenged against the computer games and the PS3s or what have you.
So are you inspired, or it makes you feel bad, Alex, to hear about this wonderful pastoral childhood? You're feeling you cannot give it to your kids?
I feel like I'm sometimes failing as a parent when I hear your guys' stories and what my parents tell me. I feel like the exceptions are the standard. I feel like I should go back to the farming community and do all the other stuff.
Alex, I absolutely understand that. It's not easy. In a way, it almost seems like a privilege to be able to offer this ideal life to children. Con, what do you say?
Honestly, it doesn't take much of an ideal life, but you could occasionally turn the television and the PlayStation off. I mean, I know people who have seven-year-olds who have I won't mention the name of it, but who have a handheld computer game, and honestly, they spend tens of hours on it every week. And you think, well, you know what? You should be learning a little bit more about the trees around you. You should be building the occasional thing. You should be learning a few skills. It's not a big deal. It's not a perfect world. I'm not talking about returning to a rural idyll or out in the farms or something. As I say, I grew up in a suburb.
Yep.
The point is, you can do this just with getting a little more time away from your kids and the computers. That's all.
Let's get out to Idaho and Jules. Calling from Firth, Idaho. Jules, great to have you. What do you see?
I think it's wonderful. Growing up on a farm, being a girl, having one other girl friend and five boys, having to travel on our bikes 5 miles round trip to get everybody gathered up, whether we were building a tree house, whether we were swinging off the rope for the first time and plunging into the canal, or seeing who could leap the farthest off of their bike. I just feel that when a child has this ability to use their imagination and to test themselves, I do feel that just because I have the ability to do all of this, I'm a stronger person.
Oh, Jules, it comes right through. We hear it. So what do you make of it when it's the dangerous book for boys? Does that bother you, or who cares?
Oh, heavens no. A woman could write a book and say, the dangerous book for girls. I mean, the author is completely right. He merely did a book for boys saying that what boys like to do. Well, you know, I'm a girl. I would buy the book and I would read it. I'm not offended to the fact that it was, the title has boys.
Jules, in Idaho, we've got it loud and clear. Katha, do you mind distinctions? Can we draw the line, or are you afraid that it does somehow turn us back and end up disadvantaging girls?
I just don't see the point of it, I guess, is
is that because you won't acknowledge a difference,
device.
Or you don't acknowledge a difference?
I think this would be I think that this book could have been called The Dangerous Book for Kids.
Do you insist on that? Is there a I mean, what, you know, there are boys, there are girls. Why does it matter to you if it's boys instead of kids?
Well, I think the reason that it bothers me is that it promotes a certain kind of masculinity, which has many charming aspects, and it has many aspects that are actually, multisexual. I mean, you know, bigenderal.
Right, but the span genders.
Yeah, yes. And so, but it's kind of is trying to claim those things for boys. And I think the way we do think about gender is often, if it's a boy thing, it can't be a girl thing, and vice versa. And boys already do a lot of that. and more than girls. For example, girls will read books with male protagonists. And boys, we are always being told, one of the reasons they don't read so much is because there are so many girl characters in books.
But do we cut boys off from something essential by trying to protect against that potential pitfall? Or not?
Wait, what's the pitfall?
You're saying
with a woman?
No. Well, I was taking you to say girls end up on the losing side of this equation. Maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah,
but
no, I'm just saying that I think boys are invested in a definition of masculinity that excludes things that are labeled female much more than girls exclude themselves from things that are labeled male. And I think that is a limitation on boys. And one of the nice things in this book is he says, here's how to grow a sunflower, here's how to cook something. It's true, you have to kill the rabbit first, but, you know, there is sort of these intermittent, you know, here's some poetry.
Even a segment on girls themselves, and he says, first rule, listen.
Yeah, he does say listen, that's true. But it is sort of this idea of girls are these mysterious people, send them a secret Valentine. You know, I mean, it's a very nostalgic book, and I don't want to, you know, come against it too heavily, because there are things in it I think are very charming and lovely, and I, like everyone else who's spoken, I think kids of both sexes spend much too much time watching television and emailing and playing computer games and other things like that. I, too, mourn the loss of grammar. I love the books that he mentions, and I, you know, read most of them. So there are lovely, lovely things. And if parents buy this book and say, you know, here, let's make a battery together instead of retreating to our separate rooms and emailing our friends.
Yeah, then bravo. We've got a boy, maybe a grown-up one, calling from a sailboat off the South Carolina coast. How can we resist that in this conversation? Jed, my sailing friend, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you? I hope you can still hear me.
Yes, where are you? What are you sailing today, Jed?
Well, we're actually motoring at the moment. But we're going up the coast to Oriental. We were down in Georgetown.
Wonderful. What do you think?
Well, you know, society has created an imbalance between boys and girls, let's say, but there's also just the gender differences that I think are, as you'll find in nature. Take a look at a bird. The male of the species will sit on a tree, and he'll do nothing all the time except when a competitor comes in the way, and then he's all out for the kill. I think those are sort of natural things that the male has, and that
except among lions,
women can
of course.
Have them.
Except
yeah,
among lions, my friend Dan says. But let the man have his aggression, and we hear it, and have a nice day sailing along there, Jed. Dan, what are you thinking?
Well, again, I'll make the point I made before, is that people are fascinated with biology today, and they emphasize the differences between men and women and boys and girls.
Today as opposed to in history?
Well, I think that there is this nostalgia. I think we're going through this incredible period of social change where, as I talk about in Alpha Girls, you know, within 5 to 10 years, there'll be more living female college graduates in the United States than males. And this is unprecedented. And women are moving into positions of power that they never had before. And part of it, that makes a lot of people nervous. And, you know, in situations like that, we want to go back to a time when, you know, girls were girls and men were men.
Yeah, Khan, is that the message?
Well, no, it's not as simple as that. If you have failed a generation of boys by feminizing an education system, and I would suggest that it's possible that we have, judging by the way things are going, then you get into real trouble, because I think everyone will agree with the fact that if you're going to get trouble in a school or a city, it tends to be caused by disaffected boys. If you want to have a peaceful, healthy sort of future, you can't really afford to lose boys, more than girls in many ways. You know, the trouble comes from them. So we do need to look especially hard at the way we raise boys, at the way fathers spend time with them, and the way schools educate them, because it's important not just for them, but also for the whole of society.
Right, but it may not be the case that we want to give them greater access to guns in order to save them. And part of what we want to do is to give them what the feminist movement has given girls, and that is more options to
well,
I agree with you that they need to get outside and do a lot of these things.
Katha, we've got the last 10 seconds goes to you, my friend. What do you say? It's a fun book no matter how you come to it, but what does it leave you thinking, Katha?
It leaves me thinking that a lot of people are afraid that their sons are gay. And
oh,
this book,
oh, boy.
This book is going to cure them.
Okay, so we've got the whole spectrum. It's all out there. I've got to say, it's fun front to back, no matter how you look at it. Con Eagledon, co-author of The Dangerous Book for Boys, joining us from the UK today. Thank you very much, Con.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations, Con.
Katha Pollitt with course. The Nation. Thanks for having you. Dan Kinlan, author of Alpha Girls and Raising Cain. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Go play.